Blog Talk Radio.
We are all one planet, all one people of Earth, all one planet, sharing our living, our dying, our birth, and we won't stand by watching her die.
Welcome to Your Turn to Speak with your host, Beth Miller. All points of view must be brought to light if we're to reach the wisest solutions to challenges we face. Guests on Your Turn to Speak have unusual insights to bring to the collective conversation. They have been invited because of the positive impact of their loving presence on Earth. Though their ideas may be hidden by the glare of the mainstream focus, their perspectives are guaranteed to inspire and enrich us all. And now, here's your host, Beth Miller.
Welcome to Your Turn to Speak. I'm your host, Beth Miller. My guest tonight, Mary Grace, does not believe communicating with deceased loved ones is something evil. But the church she once attended believes it is and excommunicated her. Mary Grace is an author, parapsychologist, and spiritual counselor. She is the founder of Gifts of Grace Ministry, a specialized counseling service for those who have had mystical, supernatural, paranormal, or near-death experiences. She conducts spiritual workshops and lectures nationally. She teaches about the importance of relationships, including relationships with those in the non-physical realm. In them, she sees potential for healing and reconciliation. In her book entitled The Communion of Saints, Talking to God and Grandma, Mary shares personal experiences that led to her understanding of after-death communication. The book also looks at historical and scientific perspectives on the subject and offers an instruction manual for communicating with loved ones who have passed on. Mary suggests her book may be helpful to anyone who has lost a loved one, but is particularly geared towards people of the Catholic faith who understand the doctrine of the Communion of Saints, which postulates an eternal relationship among all saints. She asserts her book is not heresy. It is a book of companionship and inspiration. That big question she poses is, if we can talk to God and the saints in heaven, why can't we talk to Grandma in heaven? This seems to be a good place to open up our dialogue this evening. If we can talk to God and the saints in heaven, why can't we talk to Grandma in heaven? Mary Grace, it's turn to speak.
Hi, for having me, give me the opportunity to share my passion for the paranormal. And the question you posed is the burning question that I had that led to 10 years of research and writing a book on the Communion of Saints because of my spiritual experiences that I had. I learned that talking to my deceased mother was against the teachings of my church, and I couldn't understand why. My mother was a devout Catholic, and I had this burning question that no one seemed to have the answer for. If we can talk to God and the saints in heaven, why can't I talk to my own mom or grandma or our Uncle Joe or our brother? What's up with that?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what I found through my research is that, yes, we can talk to our relatives in heaven. And many, many religions, not just Catholicism, but many religions do teach that spiritualism or speaking with non-physical beings is against the faith. But I found there was a huge contradiction in church teachings, in the Roman Catholic Church teachings, because on the one hand, they forbid speaking with the deceased, and on the other hand, we have this church, foundational church doctrine called the Communion of Saints, which not many people understand, and I was one of those Catholics who every week in Mass you would say, I believe in the Communion of Saints whenever you recite
yes.
the Apostles' Creed. But what does
in the Apostles' Creed and the Nicene Creed, yes.
And I was like, wow, I never put it into context until I did have an after-death communication from my mother and found out the contradiction church teachings, because they do teach us to that we have an eternal relationship with loved ones in heaven.
Can anyone talk with their deceased loved ones in spirit, or is it like a special gift that only a few people have? That
we all have psychic ability, what is also known as our sixth sense, and also called extrasensory perception. We all have this gift, and it's just part of us as spiritual beings. We are spiritual beings, first and foremost, and we all have mm-hmm. these gifts. Some people have them naturally more developed, but we all have them at one level, and most of us, many people use them subconsciously. And a perfect example I like to use is for any mothers out there, anyone who's ever had a child has this mm-hmm. psychic bond with a child. And myself, I don't have children, so when I hear a baby crying, I think I just hear, wow, I hear this annoying noise, you know. But somehow
yeah.
that mother, when she hears her baby crying, she knows exactly what that child needs, whether the child's hungry, whether her baby is sick, or whether she needs her diapers changed. Now, how and why is that? That amazes me. And often mm-hmm. Mothers, not just mothers, but fathers too, even with adult children that might be living long distances away from them, automatically know when something is wrong with their child because of that mm-hmm. psychic bond. You know, I think most people are familiar with that.
Yes.
And that's just one example of how we use our extrasensory perception subconsciously, and which we do all the time. Another just quick example, if you ever walked into a room, and you knew immediately someone in that room was mad at you, or you felt there was anger uh-huh. in the room,
mm-hmm.
nobody said anything, but you know there's something negative going on. And that's just another example of us using our also called intuition or psychic ability. But then
right.
anyone can learn to hone that ability and develop it and learn to communicate consciously with spirits and not just subconsciously.
I see. Well, what would be the potential benefits of establishing communication with someone who is no longer living in the physical world?
Well, the biggest benefit is the healing. The healing that is needed that comes when people are grieving the loss of a loved one. And when we keep those loved ones as a part of our life, many of us are raised in learning about eternal life and life after death. We're taught this in most religions. But when we keep our loved ones who have crossed over as a part of our life, it helps us, you know, to know that there is a physical separation. But on a spiritually and emotionally, we are never really separated from our loved ones. And to keep mm-hmm. that communication, and it can be even one way, just a lot of people will just say, you know, hi to their mom or loved one that's crossed over when they get up in the morning, or you walk by their picture and you acknowledge them. Just a simple mm-hmm. thing like that, keeping them alive in your memories, helps to establish that eternal bond and know that, yeah, they may have crossed over, but they're not gone. They're still a part of your life, always will be, always have been, and probably will be in the next life, too.
Can you think of any reason why it would be of a risk to communicate with someone who's passed on?
Not as long as the intention is positive. I write a section in the book about intention. A lot of the reason that spiritualism or spirit communication gets a bad rap, so to speak, is because some people do it with a negative intention. And if you intend to communicate with negative spirits, that's exactly what you will get. Some people call this, there's something called Satanism or devil worshiping. Mm. So if you intend to communicate with Satan or the devil, and there's a term they have for this, a ritual, and it's called a black mass. Now, when you have a Catholic mass, it's done with positive, good intentions, and we call on the saints, and we even call on the spirits of loved ones that have crossed over as far as the mass. And when it's done with positive intentions, then that's exactly what you will get, will be positive spirits, because like attracts like, and that's just how the universe works. And there's a lot of books written about the power of intention. And so intention is important. So as long as you, you know, intend to call on good spirits, surround yourself with white light, use some protection, then there really is no harm. There is no harm.
I see. I know that sometimes, you know, young people get curious and they do the Ouija board thing and they get a little bit scared when they see some of the things that go on, you know, with it. So,
well, I'm glad you brought that up. I do want to make a note about Ouija boards.
Okay.
It's not unusual. Usually within once every 3 or 4 months, I get a call from someone who's been playing with Ouija boards. And it's never good. And the reason is, and I did research on this, is a little bit about it in the book, is because it was the way it was, the intention that it was created with back in early, it was, well, it predated Christianity, actually. It goes back to Judaism. But it was used to raise negative spirits. And so, and also it's just, it attracts spirits of a lower vibration. And not necessarily always evil, but you can get pranksters, tricksters, people that are just looking for an opportunity to jump in and create havoc with your life. So I do warn against using Ouija boards. It's not a good thing. You shouldn't have one in your house. And negative energies can attach themselves to you when using one. So it's seen as a harmless, you know, a game that was then taken over by, I think it was, I can't remember which game company it was, Parker Brothers, I think. It's not a game, it's not a toy. So I'm glad you brought that up. Just stay away from them. There's a lot of ways to communicate with spirits. Stay away from Ouija boards.
Now, in the process of establishing a relationship with a loved one who's departed, is there an appropriate time to sort of let go, or isn't that relevant because we're all kind of bonded eternally in spirit?
Now, that's exactly it, the way you put it. There is, when you say letting go, the way I interpret that is some people can be so obsessed with when they're grieving the loss of a loved one, they want to hang on to that person. There's a healthy balance of keeping a person's spirit or memory alive in your life, and then there's an unhealthy attachment to that person and that you don't want to move on with your life, and you don't let that person go emotionally or even physically, which is, if you become so obsessed that you can't, that all you want to do is focus on that person to exclusion of living people in this world, then that can actually make a spirit earthbound and keep them from moving on and crossing over. So it's not good to do that. So there is a healthy balance. Some people get addicted to going to mediums. You know, they can't make a move without getting a message from somebody from a loved one. But all the messages we need to get are on our own. We can do ourselves. It's one of the reasons I wrote the book and I teach workshops is how we can do this ourselves. We don't really need a third party. But there is a healthy balance in that you need to live your life. We are in the physical world. You're with people in the living. And honor that memory, keep that person alive in your life, but don't be obsessed, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mary, I see there's a caller holding. Would you like to take a call at this time?
Sure, I'd love to.
One moment. You're on Your Turn to Speak. May I have your name?
Hi, Beth. That's David.
Hi, David. Do you have a question for Mary?
Well, I just tuned in. I was interested in the show. And I had an angel reading done by a healer from England today who had some interesting information for me. And I think that one of the angels that, well, she said it was not an angel, but a spirit that has been following me very much of my life is with me. And I just wondered if your guest might have anything to offer me as a further affirmation.
Mary, would you like to answer?
Sure. It's David?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, David, thank you for calling. You, well, one thing is to establish, if you can, whether it is an angel or a loved one that's crossed over. Do you know?
Sure. No, I'm not sure that... I'm not sure what the case is. You know, I have many dear people that have crossed over, and one of them was a grandmother that I had. I lost at 9, and it was very traumatic for me, and I received no support through my grieving process, and it extended for many, many years because she was the only person that unconditionally loved me as a child. And I carried that grief with me for nearly 40 years at some level. You know, there was an unhealthy attachment, as you would say. And I finally was able to let her go when I realized she'd been with me all along. And, you know, I just hoped that I hadn't impeded her progress. But the other death experiences that I've had, I had a woman die in my arms who was like a grandmother to me, and then I had a beloved friend pass away in my presence. He waited for me, and as soon as I arrived, he looked at me, and he breathed his last breath. So I've witnessed death, and I've seen it as a beautiful experience, and I've been able to let other loved ones go. But, you know, if you have anything for me from a deceased loved one, I would be very open to it.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm going to say, which I don't consider my, you know, anyone that's sensitive to spirit communication is considered a medium, but I don't consider myself a medium. Man, I don't do readings and often in that way. But what, yeah, if I do, often I do pick up on things from people and we'll pass it on. But what I would like to suggest to you is if you feel like you have a particular person that's around you and you want to establish who it is, then simply ask for a sign. And one way you can do this, and this is, you know, this is an exercise I do in my class, very simple exercise that any of the listeners out there can do. And if you, a lot of times when people get impressions, they'll say there's someone around me and I think, and then they'll say a specific person. Now, you said your grandmother. Now, why would you think that? Well, a lot of times it's because they're telepathically communicating to you. It's grandma. So that's one way, is if you get impressions, if you get a feeling, if you think it's a specific person, a lot of times it probably is that person. And one way you can check that out is this is a very simple exercise, and I'm going to ask you a couple questions. Did your grandmother have a particular hobby or interest or passion, something that she was very passionate about that you know of?
Well, I know some of her hobbies. I think that the thing she was most passionate about was Jesus. She wasn't a Bible thumper, but she was a woman of very deep faith, and so I would choose that as her passion.
Okay, what about a hobby? Because we want a physical sign is what we're going to ask for. What was her hobby?
Music. Gardening,
okay. Now, the reason I'm asking these questions, I'm going to get more specific, because we're going to ask you're going to ask your grandmother for a specific sign. Okay.
Okay.
What type of music did she like?
Well, she loved to play the piano. There was a song that I can remember her playing a lot. It was the Happy Wanderer, Veldery, Veldera.
Okay, that's a great song. Now, there's very specific. You just got very specific. The more specific, the better. So when you ask for a sign, when you get that specific sign, you're going to know it's from her. So what I'm going to ask you to do, and anyone can do this, anyone that's listening, you think of a loved one, think of their passion, hobby, something they are interested in, and ask for a sign that has to do with that. So what you're going to do is tonight when you're in bed, you're going to lay down, you're going to close your eyes, and you're going to say your grandmother's name three times. So just grandma, you can use her proper name, just call her grandma and say, Grandma, please give me a sign, and I want it to be the Happy Wanderer. Okay? Now, that's pretty specific, right?
So yeah, I haven't heard it, though, since I was a kid.
You hear that song.
Yeah.
Now, you have to be kind of open as to how it comes. It might be
okay.
On a billboard that says Veldery Veldera or Happy Wanderer. It could be a book you pick up that has that title. It could be a commercial that comes on the TV. It could be radio. So just kind of be open. And when you get a specific sign from that person, you're going to get what I call the just knowing. Now, the just knowing is them telepathically shouting at you, hitting you over the head, basically, by giving you a physical sign and then telepathically shouting, it's me, it's grandma. And when you
see
what I call the just knowing, also look for other things to happen, like the hair on your arm might stand up on end, because you'll feel a presence, and when you feel a presence, you feel their electromagnetic energy, which is what causes your hair to stand up on end. And the other thing to look for is when you get a sign, sometimes you become very emotional. You may cry because, depending on how long they've been gone, happy tears, sad tears, mixed emotions. But often you're left with a sense of peace. And various people that have crossed over is to think of their favorite hobbies and connections, you know, things like that, and say, please give me a sign. And with all, when all that's said and done, I tell people, and then when you get a totally different sign, it has nothing to do with the one that you've asked for, but you know it's connected with that person in a different way, you'll still get the just knowing, the feeling of the presence, and them telepathically communicating that it's them.
Well, I have very much been able to connect just at an innate spiritual level with people that have crossed over. All I have to do is call them to mind and think of the joy that I experience with them, and I start to feel all of this tingle around my scalp.
It
always happens, with anyone that I think of. So I realize that that's how I can be connected to them, and I accept that they're with me at that moment in time, that they're right there with me. So I've had that experience.
Yeah, and it's so hopefully that's helpful, and that's just a way through kind of one-way communication. You're asking them, and it's not like a dialogue.
No.
What I call spiritual sign language. They're giving you a physical sign, and there's a whole book written on this by Bill Guggenheim on After Dusk Communications. Bill and Judy Guggenheim wrote a book called Hello from Heaven, and a lot of my research was based on their book, which is why Bill Guggenheim also endorsed my book, because, you know, signs can be rainbows. It can come in the form of birds or nature or all kinds of things, but usually it's something that comes at a specific, significant time in your life, and it just is connected with that person, whether you're just thinking of them at that time when it happens or whatever. But most people have had that experience of getting a sign from a particular loved one that's crossed over.
Well, I'm going to try that. Thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome,
David. Thank you for calling.
Okay, my pleasure. Thanks, Beth.
Thank you. Okay, Mary, well, getting back to our conversation here, that was a very valuable insight from David. My next question was, I'm getting back to the idea that I'm not sure on exactly what grounds that the Catholic and other Christian churches discourage followers from communicating with deceased loved ones. Why do they not allow it, and why do they feel so strongly against it, and has it always been this way?
In Christianity, it has not. The reason a lot of times people cite scriptures from the Bible against the practice of mediumship and communicating with spirits, and these scripture passages come from the Old Testament. Okay, and the Old Testament is basically Jewish law. So if you're Jewish, you go by the laws of the Old Testament. If you're Christian, you go by the laws of the New Testament. And nowhere in the New Testament is there anything against spirit communication. In fact, it is encouraged, and there's a passage from 1 Corinthians 12 that talks about gifts of the Spirit. And in that, it states that that we all have different gifts of the Spirit, and some have the gift of healing, some have the gift of speaking in tongues, or prophesying, and that's just another term for saying practicing spiritualism, or channeling. That's another term that they use. Speaking in tongues would also be considered channeling, and some have the gift of interpreting tongues. So this is incorporated in the New Testament. It's actually encouraged and acknowledged that we all have these gifts. And if we are, as Christians, we're taught to be like Christ. So if we're going to be like Christ, that not only includes his natural abilities, but his normal abilities, but his paranormal abilities as well. You know, whether it's the gift of healing, and whether it's the gift of multiplying loaves and fishes. And even Jesus said in scriptures, you all have these gifts, even the least among you. So nowhere in the New Testament is it written that spiritualism is against the faith. And where it comes from in Catholicism is actually until 1868, I believe was the date, spiritualism was encouraged in the Catholic Church as a part of the Communion of Saints doctrine. And the idea that we're all saints, whether you live in heaven or purgatory or earth, the word saint just means was referred to all believers or all followers of Christ. So, and then in there was what they call modern-day spiritualism in the 1840s, when there's a whole history about that. I won't get too into details, but that's when seances became popular. And people all over the country were practicing seances and communicating with the dead. And it was, at one point, over 30% of the country was practicing spiritualism. And at that time, the Catholic Church saw it as a good thing. They said, well, geez, this, you know, enhances our belief in the communion of saints. And in the book...
And I believe that that period of time was similar... our Civil War period, correct? And there were so many deaths and so many people wanting to connect and, so many people yearning to reestablish ties with their lost loved ones, so that you can understand that there would be
fire, so to speak.
Yes.
So everyone was practicing this, and the church saw it as a great thing. They even did two studies on the Church of Spiritualism. And in the studies, which nobody, they're like secret studies, nobody really knows about them, but I unearthed them in my research and they're in the book. And both of these studies they did found, they actually studied mediums for years, and they found out, it doesn't go against the faith. It really just enhances our beliefs in life after death. But what happened is, spiritualism became too popular, and eventually it was seen as a threat to the church. And the kids thought it was becoming a religion in itself. So what they did to squash it, so to speak, was to they stated that anyone practicing in seances or communicating with the dead would be excommunicated, and that was against the First Commandment. Now, I challenge that being against the First Commandment in the book, because it just says, thou shalt not have other gods before me. Now, I don't know about
right.
you, but I don't worship my deceased mother relatives the way I worship God, you know.
Right,
you don't worship
right.
deceased relatives, so that really isn't even a relevant application of the First Commandment.
Yeah.
So that's how it became against the teachings of the church. So until it was, I believe it was 1898, it was still practiced. Spiritualism was alive and well in the Catholic Church. And they just wanted to squash it for control reasons.
I see.
But it's still really,
you...
as I interpret it in the book and bring about in the book, spiritualism is still practiced in the Catholic Church every day in the Catholic Mass. It's just done under, instead of calling it spiritualism, they call it the communion of saints. It's the same thing. You're communicating with non-physical beings.
I see.
So, that's kind of where that came about.
Yes. Well, how did you feel when you were told by the authorities in your church that you were no longer welcome to participate?
Well,
in the services.
I was devastated, number one. I've been going to the same church for 40 years, had all my sacraments there, baptism on up through marriage. And, but, you know, I guess in hindsight, you know, as you look back on hindsight, all the bad things that happened to you, and it turned out to be a blessing in disguise. And I saw it as I was led to a church that would more fit my needs. And the church
that's
I go
good.
To is an independent Catholic church. So it's still a Catholic Mass I go to every Sunday, but it's not a Roman Catholic Mass. And so I'm with like-minded people. And in hindsight, the priest that basically excommunicated me did me a favor in that, I look at it as mm-hmm. being kicked out of the nest or someone taking my blanket away from me because my church was my blanket, it was my nest, and no
mm-hmm.
one likes to be kicked out of their nest, but when it happened, I think I learned how to fly, basically. You know, I just had a new church community, and that led to my writing of the book.
That is a really mature and loving way of looking at it.
And then,
I'm glad that you...
spurred me to want to basically teach others how to fly because I wanted to, if I can do this and it helped me so much with my grieving process, communicating with my mother, I'm like, there must be other people, other Roman Catholics that would like to, you know, learn this too and benefit from, you know, from the healing process. So that's what led to my book. Was to teach
others. I was going to ask you, what were the several factors that inspired you then to decide to write the book on spiritual communication with for the Catholic practitioners?
Yeah, basically what I just told you was because I was kicked out of the church and I wanted to help others to understand, to be able to learn how to communicate with their relatives, and still practice their faith, you know, to still be able to be a Catholic. So they, through my book, I can teach people, yeah, you just don't call it spiritualism. You call it the communion of saints. You can become, you can stay Catholic. You can go to a Catholic Mass, but you don't have to be afraid anymore. You know, this book is to liberate people and to stand up and say, yeah, I can communicate with my grandma in heaven or whatever, and it doesn't go against the teachings of the church, whether you like it or not. I'm just simply practicing the communion of saints. So that was, you know, because of my experiences and what happened to me, I didn't want to have to make a choice between, I didn't think people should have to make a choice between their religion and their spiritual gifts. And
right,
I was,
right.
you know, was forced to do that in a way. But then in a way I kind of compensated by going to an independent Catholic church. I just didn't want anyone else to have to go through what I went through.
I guess what I was originally thinking in, as far as the question went, was your personal experience, your first personal experience with encountering someone from the other side.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, my got on the spiritual path, how I got into all this was 2 months after my mom died. she came to visit me. I'm going to tell you a little story now.
Okay.
Sit back and relax. I'm going to tell you a little story. I'll try to make it kind of brief. But 2 months after my mom died, she came to visit me. And what happened was this. One night, as I was sleeping in my cozy water bed, I thought I was dreaming. At least it started out that way. And in this dreamlike state, I found myself standing in my old bedroom in the house I grew up with in. And in my bedroom, I was surrounded by all these boxes. And I understood that these boxes contained my mother's belongings, and they had all been packed up. It was after her funeral. And then I saw this woman who I thought was my mother standing there. And she bent over, and she reached into one of the boxes, and she pulled out two lit candles, a white one and a blue one, and she handed them to me. And as she handed them to me, I thought to myself, how odd to have lit candles packed in a box. So I took the candles and I turned around to set them on a dresser. And as I turned around, I turned my back to the woman, and I thought to myself, well, that can't be Mom because she had died. This must be an illusion, so I'll blink my eyes a couple times, and when I turn around, she'll be gone. And I turned around, and she was still there, much to my surprise. And I said to her, Mom, it can't be you. You're dead. And as soon as I said those words, I realized that she really, indeed, was very much alive because she looked so young and healthy and beautiful, not at all the way she looked when she died from cancer.
Oh.
And then my next reaction was to scold her. I scolded her and said to her, Mom, where have you been? I've been waiting and waiting to get a sign from you. And with that, she just had this big, beautiful smile. She smiled at me and simply stated, I'm here for you now, Mary. And with that, I just threw my arms around her, and we held each other the biggest hug, and I could feel her solid, feel her body, feel her touch. And then the next thing I realized is I was sitting in her lap and she was rocking me. So we must have been all of a sudden we're in some sort of a rocking chair. And as she's sitting there rocking me, she started stroking my hair and said over and over again, everything is going to be all right. Everything is going to be all right. And the tears are streaming down my eyes, and I'm just crying. And in hindsight, I think about it, how strange to be at that time a 40-year-old woman sitting in her mother's lap being rocked. But at that time in my life, 2 months after she died, I felt more like a 4-year-old little girl who needed her mother. And she was there to comfort me and hold me from beyond the grave. And as she was holding me and rocking me, and tears are streaming down my eyes, tears of grief, tears of relief, of joy, and then I just started sobbing. And the next thing I know, I woke up in bed, and I'm sobbing. And I woke up my husband, who was laying next to me. He was like, What's wrong? And I said, It's Mom. She was here. She was just here. And then it was like I had this epiphany. I said, oh, my God, Mom is not dead.
Oh.
Now, it's one thing being raised and learning about life after death, eternal life. And it's quite another thing to encounter it. because that changed my life. When I went to bed that night, life after death was just a concept to me. And when I woke up, it became my new reality.
Yes.
That was the thing that the event that changed my life, because I vowed that day to do whatever it would take to stay in contact with my mother and learn how to communicate with her, because I thought if she could take the time to come and communicate with me and visit me, then I could do what it takes to communicate with her, and that she would never, we would never be apart. She would always be a part of my life. So that was the single event that really changed my life. So I just started reading books and learning all I could to learn how to communicate with spirit.
Wow. That is an incredible story, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
I see here I have another caller. Would you like to take a call?
Great.
Okay, one moment. You're on your turn to speak. May I ask
you? Oh, you know what?
Name?
I'm just listening. I must have pressed one by mistake, but I'm finding it very interesting. Thank you.
Oh,
okay.
No,
thank
no problem.
Listening.
You're welcome.
Listen on. Okay, so anyway, just getting down to kind of some of the nuts and bolts of your work in the world. We know that you are a parapsychologist, and I wonder if you could just give us a little bit of your background on, you know, your credentials and how parapsychology can help deepen our understanding of psychic abilities.
Well, for those listeners who don't understand what parapsychology is, or what parapsychologists do, parapsychology is simply the study of events and phenomena that go beyond the normal paradigms of science. And that prefix para and parapsychology simply means beyond. Therefore, we call these events and phenomena beyond normal or paranormal. So basically, anything parapsychologists study, all things that are paranormal, which includes psychic ability, which is also ESP and spiritual gifts. There's a lot of different names for it, and sixth sense. So it is the study of psychic phenomena. And go ahead.
I know I am a member of our regional group, the Institute of Noetic Science. And I believe I saw in your biographical information you also have an interest in that group. But I know that they actually do kind of conduct empirical studies along the lines of ESP and telepathy and things like that.
I'm actually a member of something similar. They get mixed up as IONS and IANS. IANDS stands for the International Association of Near-Death Studies. And that's, I'm a member of that, and we get a lot of crossover members, and IONS is the internet, Noetic Sciences. So they're very, very similar organizations, and a lot of it has to do with the study of consciousness, and study of consciousness is anything to do with spirituality, spiritualism, psychic phenomenon, that all kind of falls in that realm, because is know that science, what we call hardline sciences, cannot define or understand consciousness.
Yes. And obviously the idea of consciousness beyond the physical body, once the spirit leaves the body, there is remaining a consciousness, so that would probably fall into the sense of parapsychology.
Yes.
And could you talk a little bit about the relationship of telepathy and prayer?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people say I don't believe in, you know, telepathy, psychic phenomena, and all that goes against the teachings of our faith. But anytime you pray, you are indeed practicing what's called telepathy, or which is a type of psychic ability. Telepathy simply means mind-to-mind communication. So when you're you're communicating, when you're praying to God, the saints, the angels, your guides, or whoever, whether it's grandma, you are practicing telepathy. So a lot of people don't think twice about praying. You know, they always say, well, geez, everybody prays. And it's interesting because why, you know, from a scientific point of view, prayer makes no sense. You know, if you can't prove telepathy, but we all, you know, the worldwide people pray, and that comes from their innate intuitive knowing that on a spiritual realm that we are, in the spiritual part of us, we are indeed connected to a spiritual realm. And that's why we pray.
I know, like, whenever I hear a siren going in the distance, I send what I thought would be like a prayer saying, oh, may spirit embrace lovingly whoever is involved with whatever that siren is going to. You know, so that would be considered both a prayer and a kind of a telepathic.
Yes, indeed. I do a similar thing. I do if I pass an accident on the road and there's an ambulance there, I do the sign of the cross and send a prayer to that person. But definitely, and now there's two types of, there's psychic ability, which actually is telepathy between two living people. And there's a difference between psychic ability and mediumistic ability. There's some nuances there, but when you use telepathy to communicate, say, to a child that's on another part of the country and you want to send them a prayer, that would be using your psychic ability. But when you communicate telepathically to a non-physical being, like an angel or, you know, saint or relative who's passed over, that's the use of your mediumistic ability, and that's called spiritualism. So it just means spirit, you know, mind-to-mind communication to non-physical beings, which is basically spiritualism or prayer.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, you know, before our time runs out, I wanted to have you give us a little bit more information about your book. For example, you know, how it's organized, what the format of the book is, and...
Okay.
Just
yeah,
a little bit of its basic message.
Yeah, the book is in three parts, and I love those books that are called The Idiot's Guide. You know, The Idiot's Guide.
Oh, yeah.
I got everything. I've got like 10 of them. Idiot's Guide. Psychic Communication. So I modeled the book after that because it takes some, I wanted it to be simple to understand for people, and I just love those books. So at the end of each chapter, there's a summary of the chapter along with a section called Just My Opinion. But there's three parts to the book. Part one is about my spiritual experiences, my after-death communication with my mother, and then I had a near-death experience, and that's in there, and how that led to me writing the book. Part two is what I call the educational part, and that's the history of the Communion of Saints, what it's all about. It combines parapsychology with Christian theology and mysticism, teaches all about those subjects. And part three is your self-help guide, step-by-step instructions on how to communicate with loved ones in heaven, which include guided meditations in there. And I want to say briefly, I want to give my website because I have a small independent publisher called Tao Publishing, and right now the book is primarily available through my website. And,
okay, give us your website.
Okay, and the website is www.giftsofgraceministry.org. And just so you know, it's ministry singular, because if you put Gifts of Grace Ministries, you'll get a different website. So it's giftsofgraceministry.org, and if you go there, there's a link to purchase my book, and there's also a link. You can get my email address and my phone number all from the website if you want to contact me. And then I also do spiritual workshops all over the country for anyone that wants me to come and do. Some of the names of my workshops are based on different chapters in the book. They're all based on the paranormal. But I have spiritual sign language, staying connected to loved ones and spirit. It's one workshop, and it's teaching about, and in that, it was like the exercise I gave earlier with David on how to,
yes.
There's a whole workshop on that with a guided meditation. and there's one on the Communion of Saints, and it's kind of what I call my Catholic seance, jokingly, because it incorporates elements of the Catholic Mass along with a spiritual circle, and he has a ritual, and they all have PowerPoint presentations for educational parts, and then there's also meditations for experiential parts. And then I got a workshop called Mystics, Mediums, and Muggles. And Muggles
oh, Muggle Death and the Harry Potter Muggle.
Carl Death from Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling, thank you. And I use that term to apply, to describe people who, what I call, are in a dormant state of psychic ability. And because we all have the psychic ability, and people that don't consciously use it. I needed a term to come up to describe those people, so I used Muggle. Not that it's a bad thing. So I do workshops. I'm available for speaking engagements about my book, about near-death experiences. And I also do counseling for people who've had paranormal, mystical, supernatural near-death experiences.
Yes, you do your counseling, and that's under the name of Gifts of Grace Ministry, correct?
Gifts of Grace Ministry is the name of, yeah.
And I was wondering if any of our listeners were interested in seeking counseling for some of these issues that we've been discussing. First of all, how can someone who is interested in your counseling services get in touch? Would that also be through your website?
You have to scroll to the website, call me, email me. The contact links are there, all the information. I can do over-the-phone counseling. I do over-the-phone meditations, healings, that type of thing. I do live in south of Rochester, New York, in the States, and I do have people in my home very rarely because I travel a lot to do counseling, and a lot of my clients, if they're within a radius of the area of Syracuse, Rochester, or Buffalo, I will travel and meet people different places for counseling. So if you're in the area, or the Finger Lakes, like I would consider, you know, Corning area, by the Ithaca. So, anyone that wants a group of people together to have a workshop, it can be a church group, a group of friends, small Christian community. I just ask that you get like 10 of your friends, the minimum of 10 people together, and I'll come to your home, church group, wherever, and then there's prices on the website, but it's all negotiable because I'm a non-for-profit organization. So depending on how far away you live and the travel expenses, it's what we figure on.
Wow, that's great. Well, we are almost to the end of our program this evening, but I was wondering before we go, if you would like to offer just some summarizing or concluding words of support and encouragement to our listeners who are grieving over the loss of loved ones.
Yeah, just to reiterate, the exercise that I did earlier in the show, for those who didn't listen, is to just, you know, tonight when you go to bed, close your eyes and think of someone that you would like to communicate with, and you can just, you know, telepathically in your prayer, silent prayers and thoughts, or you can say it out loud, is just tell them what you think, how you're missing them, how you're feeling. A good way to communicate is just also by writing down your thoughts, your feelings. There's an exercise in the book on after-death reconciliation. Often people die when there's unresolved issues. So there's just a lot of different ways to stay connected. And another good way is to be involved in a charity that has something to do with your loved one that's crossed over, whether it's a golf tournament, a spaghetti dinner, it's donating or participating in something for the Cancer Society or illness that they're associated with. But do something positive and do something, you know, kind of hands-on, something that will keep you busy and motivated, and that will help you to connect with other people that are grieving and going through the same thing. There's Compassionate Friends groups, the IONS group, the International Association of Near-Death Studies. It's not just for people who've had near-death experiences. It's for anyone that, you know, wants to have that connection with eternal life. There's a lot of spiritual groups, you know, So just get involved and see what's in your area and start meeting other people that are going through the same thing. And I think, you know, doors will open for you and you'll start getting that comfort from knowing that you're not alone and that it's very normal to have a paranormal experience. And when you do get that after-death communication, please feel free to share it with others. And know one of my sayings, my Gifts of Grace models, is no, you're not going crazy. And yes, I believe you. And to get a sign is not an evil force of the devil, but a natural God-given gift. So just embrace that when it happens and stay in touch. Stay in touch with your loved ones that have crossed over.
Interesting. You know, as you speak, I think about one of my own personal experiences. When I was a teenager, my father passed on very suddenly, actually. And it turned out that about a week before he died, I went to a movie, and it was To Sir with Love.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember shortly after he died, I listened to the words of that song, and it was just describing so much about my relationship with my father that I was able to really, you know, kind of break out of that shock period when it first happens, the sudden death, and I was able to bring, you know, the tears out, and it was such a cathartic kind of thing, and it was so necessary that I cleanse my, you know, my system, you know, with those tears. But it has appeared that on the anniversary of his death, on subsequent years, I would just automatically turn on, you know, the radio, and there would be that song, To Sir With Love.
That was the name of the song, To Sir With Love, also?
Yes, yes,
okay.
That was the name of the song. And I often thought, you know, my relationship with my father will always be an eternal, you know, kinship all through the years, you know. So I can really, really relate to your idea of looking for signs, being alert to them, and because they're there. Because
and the particular songs is just so common. It's just an easy way to communicate. And that's just such a typical. And yet everyone has a specific song, you know?
Yes, yes. And that's so unique to each person.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think of the Bible verse in Corinthians that says, now we see through the glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know in full. So there is a great mystery about living, and but there's more to it than meets just our five senses. And as you say, Mary, so articulately, we do have six senses, and we can develop it. So, well, I want to thank you so much for your generous outpouring of information tonight regarding your work and the book that you wrote. And to our listeners, as we conclude this episode, I'd like to remind you that your voice is important, and I wish that it could be heard. May it be heard. And tune in again next Tuesday night at 6 o'clock for another episode of Your Turn to Speak.
Thank you very much, Beth. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
We are all one planet, all one people of Earth, all one planet.
You have been listening to Your Turn to Speak with host Beth Miller. Each week, Beth features guests whose important views are often overlooked in the mainstream dialogue. You can listen to this show again at freespiritbroadcasting.com. And be sure to tune in next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern for another live, inspiring conversation on Your Turn to Speak.
We are all one planet, all one people of Earth, all
Are you still there, Beth?